Well, it's good to be here, and thanks for the invitation. And I'm going to talk about stuff today and why we like it and how maybe not to like it as much. So I was doing some research, and I found out that stuff starts like with wood and metal and coal. And it's just like the basic elements of all our stuff is out there. And then somebody decides we need some more things to have. So they take the basic elements and then they produce things. And, you know, right now everybody wants to produce it in America, but the production is all across the world. People in factories, and even outside, sitting in chairs, just making stuff. Okay, so all this stuff has to go someplace. A lot of it goes to America. And now it ends up in these big box stores or little mom and pop stores, and they have to make us have a desire for it. Now, Buddhism says the problem with desire, it always leads to suffering. And if we can get rid of our desire, we won't suffer as much or at all, but then we won't buy anything either. So I don't know if that's a good trade-off or not, but now we have these big box stores, and how can we move the merchandise? And we do that through marketing. We create desire in people who have no desire at all.
Oh my goodness.
And all of a sudden, for unknown reasons, those red shoes look really good. And you think to yourself, if I had those red shoes, my life would be perfect. And you go down and you buy those red shoes, and it's perfect for a couple days or a couple weeks, but then it turns out to be the same old life you had before the red shoes. And you go, okay, so why was I so attracted to those red shoes? What's the deal? Why did I feel I needed those? And the problem is the story that's connected to the red shoes. Now, Princess Diana had a wonderful dress, and they were having an auction, and it was sold for a couple $100,000. And the woman that paid that money was so ecstatic. She jumped up and down, kneeled on the floor as if praying to the merchandise gods, "You're so good to me." And I thought to myself when I saw this article in the news, wow. It had nothing at all to do with the dress itself. It was all about the story. Mm-hmm. And for the rest of her life, when she shows people that dress, it comes with a story. And if you look around and see all the stuff that you have, I bet you'll find a lot of stories connected to that stuff. Now, I have a friend who likes to give me stuff. For 30 years, I have lived in a room at a meditation center. So you know my space is limited. And it is packed. And I'm getting to the point in my life where it's time to sort of lessen the load, get rid of some of the stuff. So she said to me, well, I want to give you something. What can I give you? What can I give you that wouldn't interfere? I said, I only need two things. I need cat food, and I need snacks. The cat food doesn't take up much space at all, and the snacks take up no space at all, because they're gone the next day. So, in thinking about breaking that sort of trance we all have when we buy stuff, I thought about meditation. I thought, you know, if we meditate, we can let go of a lot of those stories And if we let go of the stories, we can let go of the stuff. Now, my sister, a wonderful person, had stuff in storage for over 10 years. And she moved around, and she moved one storage to the next storage to the next storage, even in different states. She could not let go of the stuff because the stories were in her head. And those things in the storage made her who she was. Then she changed. She said, I'm going to be somebody else now. I'm going to get rid of my stuff. So I was really curious. How is she going to get rid of her stuff? Well, she sold some of it. She gave away most of it. And the rest, she just threw away. Now, that was 10 years of attachment. That was 10 years of defining herself through her stuff that was in storage that she couldn't even see, but she could think about. And it made her feel like a better person to have that stuff. Now, I can relate to that because I have a lot of books. And a lot of the books I haven't read yet. I'm going to. But just knowing the books are there makes me feel like a better person. Because I know if I read that book, I'll be better for it. I may never read it. Now, there are a lot of books I have read that I can't let go of because I'm thinking to myself, well, what happens if I want to read it again? Or reach page 34 again? Because there were some good insights on that. Well, I never go back and read the same book twice. Except for one, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I have read that book three times. I have read the book A Guide to the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance twice. Because it's such a difficult book to understand, each time I read it, it's the first time I've read it. And I feel invigorated intellectually. I say, now I know. Okay, but the older I get, the less I know, and the less I care that I know. And it's a wonderful place to be. Yeah. Ram Dass at one point said, in the beginning of our life, we're in somebody training. We're training to be somebody. What are we going to be? Doctor, lawyer, musician, public speaker, what are we going to be? In the second half of our life, we're in nobody training. We're training to be nobody. And somebody once said to Ram Dass, well, why should we train to be nobody? He said, because nobody dies well. Ah. You mean the journey is not open-ended? You mean there's a time limit? You mean I may not have a Facebook page forever? Though I may.
Though you may, that's true.
They don't seem to delete the Facebook page when you pass on to your next lifetime. But here I am thinking, okay, all the stuff, all the books, all the snacks I didn't eat or wish I hadn't ate, how can I let go of those? Meditation. Imagine this. 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, you sit down comfortably or uncomfortably, depending on how you like to sit, and you bring your attention to the tip of your nose and you feel the sensation of breath going out and coming in, going out and coming in. And sometimes we lose that sensation, and a good way to keep track of it is to count each sensation. 1 to 10, 10 to 1. 1 to 10, 10 to 1, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. As you're doing this, you will find that your mind may cooperate and may not. Your mind has a mind of its own, and its job is to think about stuff, your stuff in particular, and the stories that go along with all your stuff. That's what your mind likes to think about. So the meditator goes, okay, I'm bringing my mind back to the sensation of breath. I'm letting go of that thought. After all, it's just a thought. It's not really me. It's just what the mind does. And so you come back to the sensation. One, two, three. And then there's another thought. And then there's another thought. And you bring your mind back. And you bring your mind back. And you do this for a week, a month, a year, or the rest of your life, which is probably what it's going to take. And now you start to understand how your consciousness works. It's really good. It's a tool. We're one of the only animals that walk on this earth that have such a complicated idea of self and past and future. None of the cats I take care of have a future. They don't even have a past. They just have a present moment experience. And usually, it's about food.
And pets.
Which is fine. That's why I'm there. I feel needed. As we continue our meditation practice, now we're shopping. Oh, shopping. What did President Bush say after 9/11? He said, go shopping. You'll feel better.
Wow.
I know. Good for business, though. So here we are. We're shopping. We have a thought. I can't live without that. That's what I want. And now, because of your meditation practice, you say, thinking, 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 thinking. It's just another thought. It's not even related to the object I'm looking at. It's related to my sense doors. My eye, my ear, my nose, my tongue, my taste, my touch. That's what's stimulating me to have this new thing that I really want because the story is so good. It will change your life. You'll be a better person. You'll never want to do anything else but use this product. And 6 months later, you just throw it away because you're so disappointed. It didn't change anything. Except the way you think. Okay, thinking, thinking. Now, we sit down again, thinking, thinking. A compassionate way of looking at it would be, you know, if I have this product, nobody else will have the one that I have. And I want them to enjoy their life as much as I enjoy my life. So I'm going to postpone buying this so they can have it. What a nice person I am. You know? Sometimes that's how it works. Sometimes kindness and compassion can be the reason you let go. In Buddhism, we have a story about somebody who was married and wanted to leave, and the husband was so disappointed, and da da da. But the husband finally came to realize that if she leaves, her life will be better. And he said, you have my permission to leave because I want you to have a good life. Now, some people may call that love. I call it kindness, understanding the needs of the other person. And I thought to myself, wow, that is so profound and so difficult to put yourself aside and let them be the focus. But that's what meditation can do as well. It can allow you to be more and more selfless, more and more selfless. And then you start to investigate what it means to be you. And you realize there's nobody there, never has been. It's just this process that continues because of mind and body and your human birth. And yet we will die for the person we think we are. We will steal for the person we think we are. Or we can be kind for the person we think we are. Or we can be generous for the person we think we are. It can go a variety of ways. So who do you want to be? And if you realize there's no self to be, there's a certain freedom that allows you to be anything. And anyone you want. Now, how cool is that? And if somebody is cursing you out or defaming you, it doesn't bother you because there's no you to be defamed. You let them talk. You see their anger and hatred. And you realize anger and hatred only hurts the one who is angry. Let them be angry. And go get a cup of coffee. Because life goes on. And then you get really old. And I remember my grandfather, who was in a retirement home. And he had, at the end of his life, he had a desk, a lamp, and a chair. Those were his only only items that he took with him from the two-story house he used to live in. Just three possessions. Now, I have to admit, in the desk, in the drawer, was an old copy of Playboy. But I didn't hold it against him. He was a guy to the end. And yet my mother wanted that desk and chair and lamp because it represented the story of him, of who he was. And you go, wow, the stories never end. They just keep changing and getting better and more valuable as time goes on. So what I would like to say about this talk is that it's not about stuff. It's about space. How much space do you need to live in? And how much stuff can you live without? And in the end, it's just you. It's just you. And there's only a couple things you need to let go of. And then you slip away and start again, according to Buddhism, another lifetime of suffering and disappointment. But that's how it works until you finally achieve nirvana, the ultimate peace, the ultimate destiny. So I want to thank you for listening, and I want to thank the powers to be for the invitation to speak again. And I brought my harmonica because I know... Thank you.